Thank you again, ladies. Hey, we want to thank the guys for being back. Men, how many of you are here this morning that were at retreat last week up in Santa Rosa? Can you raise your hands real fast? I heard you guys had a wonderful time. I heard some great news about how that went, and it's great to have you back. I'd love to hear more about it if we get a chance to talk individually. I have a confession to make. If you were here this last Sunday, you may have realized it. So I spent the last week before last Sunday sick in my house for the most part. And so when I showed up Sunday morning, I had forgotten that the men were away at retreat. And you may have noticed by the fact I said a couple things that might have given that away. And in my mind, I'm thinking, now, I've got like two overseers gone. I've got some of the most mature men in the church gone. I thought like somebody would have told me, right, that they weren't going to be here. And literally the whole time through both services, I kept going, I wonder what's going on? I had been so sick that I had forgotten about that. And it wasn't until after the second service, I went back into the office and I was talking to Annie. And I said, Annie, did you know of anything going on this weekend? And she goes, you mean other than the men's retreat? And I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I did that. So anyways, this is my confession of sin against the men. And I'm glad you had a wonderful time. I'd love to hear more about what God did in your life and some of the things that he taught you this last weekend, what you got out of it. Those are great times to get away, aren't they? They are wonderful times. Build some friendships, build your faith, and really spend some time with the Lord. So, hey, the other thing I want to do real quick is I want to apologize in advance. I thought I had kicked this cold, and about 3 days ago, it just really hammered me again and has just kind of got the better of me. I've been waking up the last 3 mornings with this mattery stuff in my eyes, and I've realized that I have some kind of allergy in my eyes. And it's kind of affecting my sinuses and other things. So I'm going to be using this, and just if I have to cough or something else, I can kind of do one of these things. Make sure that your ears are not blasted by the sound of my coughing or sneezing up here. And you know, I was telling some men before the service, the timing of this doesn't escape me. We're talking about one of the most significant things this morning in the Christian life, and that is forgiveness. And you know, I'm not a big guy in terms of the whole satanic thing out there. Satan is alive and active, but I know he's got bigger targets than me. Amen? But there is a spiritual warfare. There is spiritual warfare, and we live in wartime, don't we? And it didn't escape me for the fact that there's very many things that could distract us, and I hope that my situation doesn't distract you this morning. Because what we're going to be talking about is so essential to our lives as Christians. We're talking about forgiveness. And again, when we talk about that, I want you to really appreciate first, as we start this morning, the fact that forgiveness is uniquely Christian. Forgiveness and grace is uniquely Christian. If you were to study the major religions of the world, like Islam and Buddhism and Hinduism, others, animism, they are based almost ultimately on cause and effect. Hinduism calls it karma, right? And that is ultimately the way that the world works in their minds, and they look to that as their ultimate principle. Only the Christian faith has a principle that goes above karma. And that is a principle of grace, forgiveness. When we talk about forgiveness this morning, we are talking about something that is not available in the way that is available to us as Christians in any other world religion. It is a unique, distinctive gift that Christ has given to this world. Now, if you have heard about in the last few years, there are many studies that show that forgiving other people is something that is beneficial to everyone involved. It's primarily beneficial to the person that forgives, though, isn't it? And we're going to make this point more as we go through our talk this morning. But the reality is that forgiveness has benefits emotionally, physically, and otherwise in our lives. And it's wonderful to me, again, to realize that so much of the benefits of these things are things that God knew about, and we as believers for the last 2,000 years have had access to and been able to use in our relationships with each other. Notice at the top of your outline here, it says, from Colossians 3, verse 13, it says, bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. It's very simple, isn't it? And yet there's so many things that go into forgiveness that we need to be thinking about and chewing on. We're going to be looking at a parable of Jesus. If you want to join me in Matthew chapter 18, I'm going to go ahead and read that. As we're doing so, I want you to make a distinction in your mind as we're reading this morning. And that is, for the moment, just set aside any kind of group or corporate idea of the need for forgiveness. What I mean by that is, let's say you have a company, and there's another company, and they're having problems with one another, and there has been contracts that have been violated and everything else. I want you to set aside all of those corporate concepts of what it means to forgive and what it means to work through those contractual issues. Because what we're looking at this morning is relational. What we're looking at this morning is something that we as individual Christians really need to take to heart and practice. There are other principles that come to play in those kind of those corporate other large issues. But when it comes to personal forgiveness and the issues of personal forgiveness, we really want to be able to hear what Jesus is saying here. This is a parable in Matthew 18, and you'll notice starting in verse 21. I'm going to go ahead and read through the whole thing just so you get a flavor for this. It's just so you get the whole story, this whole parable that Jesus is saying. Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times?" He's being generous, isn't he? Jesus answered, "I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times, or 70 times seven times. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. 'Be patient with me,' he begged, 'and I will pay back everything.' The servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. But when the servant went out, he found out one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. 'Pay back what you owe me,' he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, 'Be patient with me, and I'll pay it back.' But he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. 'You wicked servant,' he said. 'I canceled all the debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you?' In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart." Now, this passage, this parable, is in a section of Matthew that is dealing with church life. The whole chapter, Matthew 18, is dealing with how do we work through conflict in the church. And so the primary place this is actually playing itself out in is in church life, as brothers and sisters in Christ. And Jesus is basically saying, in this church that we are a part of, as a family of God, we need to be conscious of the fact that we have been called to forgive. And he gives us this amazing parable to kind of make that point. Now, in a parable, the second thing we want to remember is this, is that parables are kind of stories with one central point. And we need to be careful not to go too far with the details. We want to understand the main point and figure out how each of the things that is mentioned relates to that detail. So what do I mean by that? I could read this story and I could go, wow, is Jesus saying in verse 25 that if I personally don't forgive other people, my family could be tortured and go to hell because of that? He's not saying that, is he? Right? That's where we could be pushing the details too far if we're not too careful. We want to be recognizing the fact that what's going on there is that basically everything that made this man's life up, everything that belonged to him, was lost. And that ultimately is the tragedy of unforgiveness. Now, when we think of forgiveness, what I want to do is I want to look at the steward, I want to look at unforgiveness, and then I want to look at forgiveness. And then we're going to talk about a prayer of forgiveness as we wrap this all up. First, let's talk about the steward. What is the problem with the steward? I want you to think about this for a moment. The problem with the steward began before he had that moment of accountability with the king. You see, the reality is that this servant had been living as if he was the owner. That he was an owner and not a servant, not a steward. Now, why do I keep using the word steward here? The reality is that in the ancient world, servants who were given money by their masters, by their kings, were called stewards, and they were entrusted with that money. And what was going on here is this servant had specially been given the freedom and the opportunity to invest this money from the king as his steward. And he had done nothing for the king with it. Now, just to give you an idea of the amounts we're talking about, one person in the last few years that I've read mentioned the fact that if we were to put these terms into our terms today, the steward had lost $100 billion. The steward had squandered $100 billion in our terms today, if you were to bring it into what it would mean for us today, of the king's money. An astronomical amount of money. And he had been living as if that was his. You see, one of the things we need to see here is that one of the problems of the human heart is that we as individuals want to think of ourselves as owners. That it's ours. That our life is ours. That what we have is ours. That everything that comes into our life is ours. And we, like this steward, could very easily fall into the idea that we are owners and not stewards that are accountable to the king. And if I am called in before the king and in my heart I have the heart of an owner, it doesn't matter what he says to me, I'm not going to be able to hear it, am I? Because there's something inside of me that is rebelling against, it's rejecting what he's saying to me. And this is so important for us to get in this steward's life, in this servant's life. One of the reasons why his behavior is so out of whack, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, is because he inside had been living and continued to want to live as if he was the owner of his life. You see, that is the problem of the steward. That is the problem of the servants. I got on the internet a few days ago. If you have a strong stomach and you want to see something that's very sobering, there is a place on the internet where they have what they call the national debt clock. Have you ever heard about this? See, the national debt clock basically is showing us how much American debt is accumulating every second of every day. It is one of the most frightening things you will ever see. You're sitting there watching it. Within about 10 seconds, you've just watched $1 billion added to our debt as a nation. And it's not just this one little clock that's just going like this over and over and over and over again, right? They have all these different things that they're measuring in our culture. And as they're measuring it, it's showing that the reality is as this debt is growing, the amount of debt per individual versus the amount of assets per individual is getting further and further apart from each other. Now, why do I share that? See, every single moment a human being lives as an owner of their life, they are adding to their debt with God. Every single moment that we think to ourselves that everything I have is mine, everything should belong to me, I should be able to live the life that I want to live, we are living from the posture, from the attitude of an owner. And as we start thinking about that adding up and adding up and adding up every single second, every single second, every single second, and then we suddenly realize that it's not just what I've done wrong in terms of the sins I've committed. It's the fact that I have wanted to and have been living life as if I was the owner, the king of my life. And that is not reality. That is not reality. There will be a day when every single human being, as a true servant of God, will be coming before their king. And they will be held accountable for the way they've lived their life. And it will shock us. It will shock every single one of us to realize the kind of debt that we have accumulated before our king. Some will recognize that debt, and the amount of joy and peace and excitement that we will feel and completely understanding what Christ has done for us, maybe for the first time in our lives. we will understand the depths, the heights, the breadth of the love and the forgiveness of God. You see, every moment we live as our own king, we are adding to our sin debt before God. And if we leave that unattended, if we don't deal with that heart issue, even if we've personally, so to speak, received Christ in our life, that issue can continue to grow and continue to become a bigger and bigger problem. That's the problem of the steward. Now, I want to talk about the price of unforgiveness next. The price of unforgiveness. Because as we look at this gentleman, this man, it's amazing to think about the fact that he could be forgiven in what today's terms would be $100 billion and walk away angry. Again, he didn't hear it, did he? He did not hear that his debt had been canceled. He didn't hear that. Because if he had, his whole attitude would have been different. Why? And what is the price of continuing to live as an owner of my life who isn't hearing what's been done for me? The first thing we see in terms of the price of unforgiveness in our life is a lack of peace and joy. A lack of peace and joy. You know, one of the things that are really a part of our lives when we think about some of the real fallout in our lives of not really grasping completely the forgiveness that we have in Christ and what's been done for us is that there's a lack of peace and joy. And then along with that, then, there is a loss of our sense of proportion, a loss of our sense of proportion. See, this is why that this other part of the story is emphasized. He comes before the king. He bows down, right? He fully admits, and he begs for pity, and the king pardons him, and then he walks out having been forgiven $100 billion worth of debt. And in our terms today, what this other man owed him, what we would say today is about $6,000. Now, in my world, $6,000 is a pretty good amount of money. But that is not in any way comparable to $100 billion. And here is this man that has lost all sense of proportion. And one of the things that happens in a person's life when they have been struggling with forgiving and they are living in a state of unforgiveness is they more and more lose their sense of proportion. I've been there. Where the littlest things tick you off. The littlest things get to you. And it's just one more piece. It's one more thing. It's one more thing I'm collecting. And I remember a pastor saying to me one time, he says, one of the things I look for in people's lives is that I know they're in trouble is they begin garbage collecting. And what happens is they just are collecting more and more garbage of what's going on in their life. And they just can't let go of the garbage. And they get more and more frustrated and more angry, and it just kind of grows and grows and grows in their life, and they just can't put two and two together with the fact that this garbage collecting that's going on in their lives is because there's something that they're not willing to let go of. You see, the reality is that if we see ourselves or we see a loved one struggling with just collecting grievances, And all we're doing is we're just having revenge fantasies. If I ever got the chance. Man, if I ever got the chance, right? If we find ourselves in that place, we need to just recognize that this loss of proportion is because there's probably a big issue of unforgiveness in our life. And it's so important for us to learn how to see that earlier in the process. And so we address it and we look at it. Because this next thing is the next piece, and that is it leaves us stuck in our anger, right? I mean, here's this servant who puts this other servant in jail, and he goes, you're going to be in there until you pay me back, right? You owe me, you owe me, you owe me. And he's not any happier after putting that person in jail. You know, one of the surprises is when we don't forgive and we actually get a little of what we wanted to see in another person's life, it doesn't quite feel the way we expect it would feel. We don't quite get the freedom and the peace that we expected when we got revenge. And the reality is that we were not created to find peace and joy in revenge. We can get stuck in our anger, and that's an ugly place to live. My wife and I moved to Clovis 16 years ago. I was a naive church planner, had big dreams. I had no idea how many things I didn't know. And we went into this wonderful situation, and we had these big ideas and these things that we were excited about seeing. And very early in the process, another pastor stabbed me in the back and almost undermined our entire core team from the very beginning. And suddenly I was in this situation where I was trying to just make something happen, realizing that I was already trying to deal with something that I couldn't control and that was already having this really big negative effect on the potential of this dream that I had for this church ever becoming a reality. And what happened is by the first year anniversary, we lost half of our core team. This pastor, just to give you an example, had shared in a church service discouraging people from being a part of our church. And he was supposed to be one of my partners. I struggled with that for years. There was a part of me that blamed him. There was a part of me that looked at him and I go, you know, you were supposed to be my partner. You're supposed to be my friend. You're supposed to be there for us. And this is what you do? And I struggled for years trying to process that. And the reality was that I knew what we're talking about this morning. And it was a fight. It was a battle. It was something that I had to continue to deal with because the reality was I had to continue to work with this gentleman in the situation I was in. But I realized that there was a level of anger in me that if I didn't begin dealing with, it would poison everything. You see, that's what anger does, doesn't it? You know, one of the things that I've heard that is so true, it's like unforgiveness is a little bit like taking the poison into yourself and thinking it's going to hurt the other person. You know another thing that unforgiveness does that is so related to this anger? And I love this saying. I tell myself this all the time when I'm struggling. Unforgiveness is like giving free rent to someone else in your mind. And they just stay there. And stay there. And stay there. That helped me a ton in realizing I wanted to work whatever I needed to work through to understand forgiveness. Ultimately, what we see here, the person, the servant, that basically never deals with this, that never deals with this, ultimately what we see here is they are going to be, as we see in our outline, this leads to ultimate punishment from God. Ultimate punishment from God. We don't want to minimize that, do we? Jesus does everything he can in this parable to underscore the fact that nobody wants to go there. Nobody in their right mind would want to be standing before the king ultimately in their lives with this whole track record of unforgiveness and face the punishment of God. And he's saying, take that to heart. Take that reality to heart in your life as you're struggling through these issues of forgiveness. It's going to rob you of your peace. It's going to move you to this place where you're going to lose proportion. It's going to get you stuck in your anger. And ultimately, if you don't deal with it, you have no idea what it's going to mean to stand before God and have to face him with the way you lived your life. Now, are you ready for some good news? I know that's hard, isn't it? But, you know, Jesus makes every effort in this parable to make the price of unforgiveness something that none of us want to pay because there is a high price to forgive, isn't there? There's some wonderful Christian songs that have been written in the last few years that deal with this, you know. When we're thinking about forgiveness, it feels like we're losing. It feels like we're getting taken advantage of. It feels like we're being lessened. And all the things that we struggle with to forgive, all those things are hard. There's a price to pay to forgive. But the reality is that what Jesus is trying to tell us here is that the price we pay for unforgiveness is so much greater. So let's talk about the path to forgiveness. When we think about personal relational forgiveness, let's look again at the king's forgiveness. Verse 26, at this the servant fell on his knees before the king, "Be patient with me," he begged, "and I will pay back everything." The servant's master took pity on him and canceled the debt and let him go. And again, here's this amazing thing. When we look at the king's forgiveness, there's two very basic concepts in forgiveness. The Haley and Caitlin made the point of this in their drama and their skit. And it's two things. To forgive another person first is to let go of the debt. Is to let go of the debt. It's basically saying, you owed me. It's true. It's not like I'm going to act like you didn't owe me. You owed me. But I am letting go of the debt that you owe me. And I'm willing to let go, right? And that was a wonderful image there, trying to hold on, right? And so not until we let go and we're ready to be open-handed again, right, that we can experience the other side of forgiveness. We need to let go of the debt. I want you to think about just for a moment if there's something you're struggling with in your life, and I say the phrase, they owe me. Who's the first person that comes to mind? Because it may be wise to start with that person and begin working through these issues of forgiveness with the one that feels like or seems like it's at the top of the list.